Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming to my talk and to this session. So I'm a PhD student at the University of Florida. I'll be talking to you about the influence of carbon lavability and floating treatment in potential oxidation related to subsidence in histosols in the Everglades agricultural area. So a little bit of background information about the EAA. The EAA is located just south of Lake Okeechobee. It's part of what was naturally the Everglades ecosystem. By the beginning of the 20th century, this area was drained for agricultural purposes and also for flood protection of these communities. And right after that happened, subsidence started to take place because it's a well-documented phenomenon, subsidence occurring after drainage of organic soils. So by the 50s, the subsidence rate was estimated or documented at 2.5 centimeters per year. And in the last decade, the subsidence rate has been changed and has been reducing. So some possible explanations for this are the high water tables due to best management practices that the farmers are implemented now that are linked to reduction in phosphorus that is mandated by the state of Florida, and an increase in mineral and recalcitrant carbon in the soils. So my objective is to look at these processes in relation to oxidation and subsidence of these soils. This post here is a very iconic place of the Everglades Research and Education Center, which is located in Belgrade in the EAA. And this post was set in 1924. And after about 90 years, we see loss of soil of about 2 meters of these organic soils. So this is part of my dissertation project. And the objectives here are to measure the CO2 efflux and determine subsidence rates due to oxidation in shallow and deeper soils of the EAA exposed to different water treatments, and to determine also changes in forms of nitrogen, which are linked to this process of oxidation, specifically nitrate, ammonia, soluble organic nitrogen, and also dissolved organic carbon. And also to determine the impact of varying soil depths on the level and recalcitrant carbon pools in these soils. So I sampled the EAA, I have to say, has a gradient in the depth of the soil. So north of the EAA, the soils are deeper compared to the south of the EAA. So I collected soils in the deep and the shallow area of these soils. I collected soils from 3 farms in each of those locations, and 5 40-acre plots were sampled. And these plots were sampled obtaining 20 soil cores, which were separated in increments. For the shallow soils, because the average depth is about 25 centimeters, I separated into increments, 0 to 10 centimeters and 10 to 30. And for the deep soils, I separated in 3 increments, 0 to 10 centimeters, 10 to 30, and 30 to 60 centimeters. So I set 2 experiments for this part of the project. In one of those experiments, the objective was to look at rates of CO2 and nitrous oxide and methane coming out of these soils, as well as the nitrogen forms. So I organized these soils in a randomized block design with, again, the 2 types of soil, shallow and deep soils, exposed to 4 water treatments. These water treatments were implemented based on the approach that the farmers utilized to manage these soils. So one of the treatments was flooded the whole year. The other treatment was drained for the whole year of the experiment. The other treatment was a summer flooding, because some farmers are implementing rotation with rice for several reasons that benefit the crops. And they cultivate the rice during the summer. The summer flooding was from July to October 2016. And another treatment was flood cycles, which was 2 days of flooding followed by 12 days of drainage. And this is something that the farmers do in the shallow area mostly of the EAA, because they have difficulties managing the water and the precipitation. So sometimes they retain the water for some days and then they drain the soil. Monthly CO2 measurements were performed with a gas med analyzer coupled with a LICOR chamber, and a leachate collection was performed every 3 months to measure the nitrogen forms and the dissolved organic carbon. So here are some of the results for this part of the experiment. These are the mean average yearly average for CO2 efflux, and we can see that the flood cycle treatment has very high or significantly higher CO2 efflux rates compared to the other treatments, the highest rate. This is followed by the drained soils and then the summer flooded and the flooded soils. It was found also that moisture content was an important factor in a covariance analysis controlling the oxidation in these soils. And there was also an increase in bulk density that was mostly more prominent in the soils that were exposed to these flood cycles. This is the increase in bulk density that was estimated based on the change in depth or height of the soils. There was also a seasonal effect. We can see here that during the wet season, which was here from July to October, the flood cycle treatments was the highest, the highest oxidation rate, followed by the drains and the summer flooded and the flooded soils were here at the bottom. Then after, in the dry season, the treatments behaved in a different way, with the summer flooded treatment oxidizing more than the other soils, than the flood cycles, which is here, go to the second place here. And then, interestingly, the drain and the flooded soils have similar behavior and during the dry season, which is also the cold season for Florida, from December to May and June. And then a microbial biomass carbon analysis was performed here to look at the end of the wet season, to look at what was causing these, if these differences were caused by microbial communities. And we found that the deep soils had higher microbial biomass carbon than the shallow soils, and the cycles and the drained soils had more microbial biomass carbon than the flooded treatments. Going a little bit to the nitrous oxide emissions, I don't know if you can see here, this is marked in red. This is a very important treatment. It's summer flooded. So after the summer flooded ended by the end of October, we saw a very significant peak in nitrous oxide emission. Possibly triggered with an increase in the nitrification after the drainage of these soils. And it was also found that in the deep soils was higher than the shallow soils. And what we have here is the interaction, which was significant. Going to the methane emissions, as expected, we found higher methane being produced in the flooded treatment of the soils, and we saw a buildup of this methane. By the end of the year of analysis of measurements, the methane was being accumulated in those soils and was more prone to be released when the soils were disturbed. And this didn't happen when the period of flooding was short, like in the summer flooding here. Going to the nitrogen forms, we saw that in the shallow soils, the nitrogen was higher compared to the deep soil, and an inverse trend was observed, with the deep soils having higher soluble organic nitrogen. In terms of ammonia, we found that in the flooded treatment had the highest ammonia concentration, followed by the summer flooded. This is reasonable because these soils were flooded at some point during the study. And the nitrogen was higher in the drain treatment compared to the flood cycles, which was second, and the flooded and summer flooded, which were third. And in the soluble organic nitrogen, the drain treatment had the highest nitrogen concentrations. In the DOC, we found that in the deep soils had significantly higher DOC concentrations than the shallow soils, and also the drain treatment had higher concentration within those groups of soil. The second experiment was a carbon fractionation procedure, which was a combination of acid hydrolysis and hot water extraction. So by the end of this is an experiment that is ongoing. I'm getting data for this experiment, and I'm going to focus here to show you the results of those two levile pools and the total carbon here. So this levile pool, the levile pool one, which is the more readily available carbon, was obtained with a hot water extraction on these soils, and the levile carbon pool was obtained with acid extraction with 6 molar HCl. And then by the end, we'll obtain the recalcitrant carbon, which is the remnant after this hydrolysis procedure. This, what you see here marked as star, is the future of the experiment, which is to characterize molecularly the pools of carbon. So This data is descriptive. What I have here is here's the total carbon for the shallow soils appear to be less than for the deep soils, and it appears to be a change with depth, with the top soil having more total carbon than the deeper increments. And also for the organic matter, a similar trend with higher concentration, higher percentages of organic matter in the topsoil. And interestingly, even though these soils have been affected by subsidence significantly and the depth of the soil is just 25 centimeters, because there is the soil, they still manage to have a organic matter percentage of 60%, which is very high. For the hot water extracted carbon, the more labile carbon, it appears to be higher in the deep soil compared to the shallow soil. And in the case of the HCl extracted, also there is a decline with depth. And again, the deep soils appear to have higher HCl extracted carbon. So, and I look also at the C2N ratio to look at decomposition stage of these soils. And then I found that the shallow soils had what appears to be a less C2N ratio compared to the deep soil. And this, we were thinking this might be related with nitrate, the high nitrate production in these shallow soils because of this low C2N ratio. And then some final remarks, the short flood cycles during the wet season may increase oxidation rates in these soils. So this should be avoided with the objective of soil conservation in these histosols. Moisture content is the key driver of this oxidation process in these soils. No significant differences were observed so far between the studied soils. Even though there appears to be differences in organic matter percentage and carbon fractions, this hasn't been translated into differences in oxidation of these soils. And changes in nitrogen forms are related to the water management of these EAA histosoils and also to characteristics of the soil, such as the C2N ratio. So for the future work, what I was telling to you before, I'm expecting to finish the determination of the carbon fractions and then determine the molecular characteristic of these carbon pools with NMR spectroscopy, and ultimately to input that data into a model to be able to predict soil subsidence in the EAA. All these with the objective of providing information for the farmers and for these communities that are very dependent on these soils. If you see here this picture, for somebody that hasn't been in the EAA, this is the first thing you notice is the very dark color, very black color of these soils. And actually, if you drive in on that area, there is a lot of mention of the richness of the soil and a lot of black gold measurement, because it's very important for this community. So it's in the best interest for everybody to conserve these soils. And thank you. I'll take any questions.
That's ample time for questions.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I didn't include plants was because a lot of research was done there. These areas cultivated 80% or so with sugarcane, there is some history related to that. After the Cuban Revolution took place, then sugarcane was implemented here. So there's been a lot of research on how the sugarcane is going to respond to this. So, and there was also a lot of results that was, this is going to be the oxidation of these soils under the influence of the sugarcane. So I wanted to get the sugarcane or the plant component out of the model just to look at the potential and how the soils have changed. I would expect the oxidation rates to be higher. It all depends on the management that is done of this sugarcane. There is a lot of burning of the sugarcane in the EAA because of other reasons like harvesting and also the health of the crop. So if we include the sugarcane in the model, there is more CO2 being emitted because of root respiration. So it will kind of hide what's going on with the soils. But there is also the input of roots into the soils, into the carbon to the soils, which is something that I'm going to consider actually in the model, but not in this experiment. Thank you.
Andres again.